A second figure we can ponder during this year of consecrated life is St. Margaret Mary, whose feast the Church will mark this Friday. Ultimately, what Jesus came down to communicate to her and through her to us in Prelimonial was that the new and eternal covenant is a mutual, total consecration in which Christ, with all his humanity that he assumed in order to save ours, consecrates himself for us, and that we're called to meet him at that level of total belonging. And it was precisely because the Church had lost what that meant that Christ came down to revivify that fervor. We can see in the instrument that the Lord chose to give us this great gift three lessons that are, again, so important for us in living out our baptismal and ministerial consecration to Christ for the salvation of his people. The first of the three that I'd like to ponder is the importance of spiritual direction and priests who are capable of giving spiritual direction. St. Margaret Mary Alacoque suffered because she didn't have adequate spiritual directors until the Lord finally sent St. Claude de la Colombière. And they did more damage to her inside than Mike Tyson did to anybody's face because they were not properly trained. A few years back, I was asked to pinch hit for a retreat for priests out in the Midwest. Father Robert Spitzer had gotten ill, so the bishop of that diocese called me the day before Palm Saturday to ask if I could preach a retreat for his clergy Easter Monday. So only about 8 or 9 days later. And so I said, Excellency, if I'm going to do it, I have to use a retreat that's already been prepared. He said, no problem. What do you have? I said, how about Pope Benedict and priestly prayer? He said, awesome. I'll just have my vicar for clergy call you and arrange the rest of the details. So the vicar for clergy calls me the following week, the day of our chrism mass in the Diocese of Fall River, and says, what do you want to preach on? I said, well, I already worked it out with the bishop that we'll be talking about this theme. He said, well, I don't care what you preach on as long as one of your themes is priests and spiritual direction. I said to him, listen, I'm not sure I'm going to have a chance during Holy Week as a pastor to write and research a total new conference on Pope Benedict, which is going to be the whole theme in spiritual direction. And then this vicar for clergy reiterated, listen, I don't care if you read the Red Sox scores as long as one of your conferences is about priests and spiritual direction. So I said I'd do the best that I could, and I tried to squeeze some minutes, and I was able to finish it on the plane heading on out there. When I got there, I realized that the priest was absolutely right. He understood the real problem that so many of the priests of his diocese had, which was, despite the fact that every single member of that presbyterate would have left seminary with an intention to receive spiritual direction all his priestly life long, over the course of time, over the course of workloads, over the course of spiritual directors who died or were transferred to other religious communities or whatever, the vast majority had given up the regular practice of receiving spiritual direction. And it started to wreak havoc in their own interior lives and then in the overall spiritual temperature of the entire presbyterate. How key it is for us as priests to receive spiritual direction. If we're ever going to be able to give spiritual direction to others, we can only give what we have. For a little while, we might be able to run off what's stored in the tank and then off fumes. But then our spiritual life will begin to take a hit. Not only will we cease growing, but we will actually be in danger. As St. Bernard of Clairvaux said centuries ago in a quip that eventually became applied to lawyers, the priest who has himself as a spiritual director has a fool for a directee. Another thing happens. We also become incapable of guiding others adequately, especially those in particular circumstances. So we look at St. Margaret Mary, we can see what happened to her. As she had been receiving apparitions from Jesus, she eventually confided to her superior, and various priests came in to examine her. Some thought she was nuts, Others thought she was possessed, and they hurt her quite a bit. And their false evaluations caused great difficulties in her community. The priests, theologians who were called in, were just not properly trained to help her. Finally, the Lord sent St. Claude de la Colombière, who was able to be Jesus' instrument, to tell her that she wasn't a freak, that she wasn't being diabolically played, but that all of this was coming from the Lord. Would we be capable of the same service? St. Claude de la Colombière, when he started seeing her, was in his young 30s. He wasn't 70 with great years of experience under his belt. He still had a lot to learn, but he had a vector that was in the right place. People are suffering because of a lack of spiritual direction. I remember a story, a personal story from 2005. Back in 2002, I had written a homily on the scandals that had gotten around, and I got a letter from a cloistered nun in New Jersey asking if I was Joe Landry, identical twin of Scott Landry. I said, yes, who is this nun? She knew us when she was 6 and we were 5 many years back. She asked me to visit her in her monastery if ever I was driving by New Jersey. So I would a couple times a year as I was driving up and down the East Coast. And after a few years, she said, Father, I'd like to ask you a question. Please know that you can say no. I said, thank you. I'm not afraid to say no, sister. What's the question? She said, would you become my spiritual director? I said, what? I only drive up and down here 2 times a year. Skype didn't exist at the time. Phone was going to be difficult in the community. I said, what? She said, well, 2 times a year would be better than nothing. The sisters in this community had been trying so hard to just get priestly spiritual directors, but the priests in the region and all the other priests that they would ask had other excuses of not guiding these souls. The church has given us specific instructions, and Christ has given us specific charisms so that we're able to be not necessarily Claude de la Colombière for the Margaret Mearys. We can be much more ordinary, but how much both sides of this are needed. St. Margaret Mary said about St. Claude, his gift is to lead souls to God. And would that everybody be able to say that that is likewise our gift. In the Directory on the Life and the Ministry of Priests, it specifically calls us to exercise the ministry of spiritual direction. Says that the generous and active attitude of priests in practicing spiritual direction also constitutes an important occasion for identifying and sustaining the vocations to the priesthood and to the various forms of consecrated life. In order to contribute to the improvement of their spirituality, it's necessary that they themselves receive spiritual direction. By placing the formation of their soul in the hands of a wise fellow member, they'll enlighten their conscience from the first steps in the ministry and realize the importance of not walking alone along the paths of spiritual life and pastoral duties. And Pope Benedict, in a homily to priests in March 2009, said, these days the correct formation of believers' consciences is without a doubt one of the most urgent pastoral priorities, and spiritual direction is essential to forming consciences. Today there's a greater need than in the past for wise and holy spiritual teachers. An important ecclesial service. This of course requires an inner vitality that must be implored as a gift of the Holy Spirit in intense and prolonged prayer and with special training that must be acquired with care and practice. To be able to carry out this indispensable ministry, every priest must tend to his own spiritual life and take care to keep himself pastorally and theologically up to date. It's the first point I'll make. To live out our consecration, we need the Lord's guidance. And if we're really going to be priests after His heart, we need to become capable instruments, guided by the gift of counsel, to counsel others. Second point about Margaret Mary. It's about what Jesus said when He came to her. These words have never ceased to touch me. He pointed to His heart, crowned with thorns and on fire, and He said, behold the heart that has so much loved men that it has feared nothing, even exhausting and consuming itself in testimony of its love, instead of gratitude. I receive from most only indifference, irreverence, sacrilege, coldness, and scorn that people have for me in the testimony, in the sacrament of love. Jesus wants love. He wants adoration. He wants us to take Him in the Sacramentum Caritatis seriously. It's not because He's an emotional hypochondriac. It's because He loves us. He wants us regularly to place ourselves into a situation where we can be transformed by Him through this loving sacrament. It's the reason why Jesus appeared when He did and asked for what He did. He wanted the Feast of the Sacred Heart established within the octave of the Feast of Corpus Christi. He asked her in a specific way to do nights of Eucharistic reparation on Thursday nights when He founded the priesthood. He wanted the Eucharistic practice of frequent communion, especially on First Fridays. It's important to stress that Jesus was asking not just for devotion or recognition of His sacred humanity and burning love. He was asking us to respond to Him with all that we have. And what pained Jesus most, He said in the sentence right after that, which is normally cut from the quotations, is He said, "What I feel most keenly is that the hearts that are consecrated to me treat me in this way." It's one thing for the tepid to take Him in the Eucharist for granted. It's quite another thing for nuns, quite another thing for consecrated men and women in the middle of the world. It's another thing, especially for priests, not to treat Him with love. What pains me most keenly is that hearts that are consecrated to me treat me in this way. So how do we do reparation for how much the Lord suffers in the sacrament of His love? I think the easiest thing that we can describe is to reverse the five things He specifically complains about. Jesus said that most treat Him with indifference. In contrast, we as priests, personally and pastorally, are called to try to help people to make Jesus the biggest difference maker in their life. To encourage Eucharistic adoration, try to start it. To encourage them for daily Mass, unless they can't come. The Lord taught us to pray, "Give us today our supersubstantial bread." And the Father has given us that only worthy nourishment of our soul. But so many of our people go without it on a daily basis. If the Jews could make it without the manna-like coriander seed in the desert, how are our people really going to make it to sanctity, except if the One who is holy, holy, holy is helping them each day? Jesus said that most treat Him with irreverence. We see this in the way sometimes people come up to receive Him. But our lay people also see it in the way sometimes we pre-celebrate Mass with little or no devotion. All of this, Jesus says, pains Him. In contrast, Jesus wants us to treat Him with deep piety, real reverence. Jesus said that most treat Him with coldness. We see this sometimes in the way we can celebrate Mass without enthusiasm, or people can attend as bored and distracted spectators rather than ardent participants. Christ wants us to be more passionate about Him in the Mass than the most fanatical Mets fans are during a successful playoff run. He wants us singing, sincerely meaning the prayers we say, treating others at Mass with warmth and love. When we don't, He's wounded. He added that most treat Him with scorn. It's shown in the way some speak disdainfully about Jesus in the Holy Eucharist, calling Eucharistic adoration cookie worship, or the tabernacle the bread box. It's shown in the way some priests and extraordinary ministers mishandle the Eucharistic particles or the precious blood. In contrast to scorn, Jesus wants us to treat Him with incredible love. Finally, Jesus talked about sacrilege, seen most commonly by peoples, including priests, receiving Him without being in the state of grace. Most of us would never invite a guest over for dinner to a filthy house. But many receive Jesus with souls in need of thorough purification through the sacrament of his mercy. We likewise see it when priests celebrate Mass while living double lives, or when extraordinary ministers of Holy Communion knowingly give Holy Communion to those who obstinately persist and manifest grave sin. Jesus wants, rather, for us to receive and share him in a sacred, not a sacrilegious way. We've been saying for centuries to the Lord, O meek and humble of heart, make our hearts like unto thine. Jesus wants to do that. He wants to transform us. He wants to educate our hearts to love him and to love like him. And the best way we do so is by receiving and adoring Jesus in the Eucharist with precedence, piety, passion, praise, and purity. In short, by treating him as he deserves. The last aspect is about the Sacred Heart and the priesthood. Le sacerdos, Jesus said to Margaret Mary, c'est l'amour du cœur de Jésus-Christ. It's the love of the heart of Jesus. Priesthood is the love of Jesus' heart, St. John Vianney would repeat. The eternal high priest appeared to Margaret Mary to reveal to her and through her to us and the whole church the depths of his priestly heart. And Jesus wants us to have more than a devotion to that heart. We're called, in a sense, to become Christ's arteries, allowing the love of the heart of Christ to flow through us into the world. Therefore, it's crucial in our priesthood that we understand profoundly what Christ did in order for us to grasp what Christ wants of us as disciples and apostles. As priests, we're ordained not just in persona Christi Capitis Ecclesiae, but at the same time, we're ordained in corde Christi amantis, in the heart of Christ on fire with love. Because the priesthood is the love of Jesus' heart, for us to be a priest worthy of him, we must be filled overflowing with that love flowing from his heart. This is something that the popes have stressed since 2002, the year of the revelations of the clergy sex abuse crisis, when the church instituted a world day of prayer for the sanctification of priests, not just on any day during the year, but precisely on the solemnity of the Sacred Heart. Why? Because we're supposed to learn the priesthood from Jesus' heart. Pope St. Pius X said, every priestly vocation comes from the heart of God. When John Paul II instituted this feast, he said that the reason was because the Feast of the Sacred Heart celebrates God's merciful love that becomes tangible for priests in the Eucharistic mystery, in the sacrament of Christ's love which we celebrate daily, and in the sacramental pardon which we administer and receive. Pope Benedict reiterated the connection at the beginning of the year for priests, which, you know, began on the Feast of the Sacred Heart of Jesus and concluded on this feast. He said, how can we fail to remember that the gift of our priestly ministry springs from Jesus' heart, the heart of a God who is moved and pours out his love on all humanity, who doesn't give up in the face of ingratitude, not even in the face of rejection by the people he has chosen. Pope Benedict continued, in the heart of Christ, the essential nucleus of Christianity is expressed and given to us. The essential nucleus is contained in the heart of Jesus, which is poured out in the sacrament of his love. The love that has saved us helps us already to live in God's eternity. His divine heart calls to our hearts, inviting us to come out of ourselves, to abandon our human security, to trust ourselves in him and follow his example, make ourselves a gift of unrestrained love, so that our entire life can be a commentary on the words of consecration. This is my body, this is my blood, this is my sweat, these are my tears, these are my calluses given out of love for you. We come here before the host that was consecrated by one of us during this year of consecrated life. We priests enter intimately into Christ's consecration in the upper room, so that as he prayed in John 17, we might be consecrated in the truth of his holy word. Every Mass is an opportunity for us to renew our consecration in Christ, as Christ through us consecrates bread and wine into his own body and blood, the tangible sign of his own consecration. This is what strengthened Saints Teresa and Margaret Mary. This is what will strengthen us, so that we and others with us may then come to worship Christ forever, y por siempre y siempre, with all the saints at his eternal right side. Let us ask through St. Margaret Mary's intercession for this grace of the courage to receive spiritual direction and be generous in giving it, to treat him in the sacrament of his love with all the reverence that the Holy Spirit can inspire, and then to become a tangible, living, breathing sign of the love of his heart in our priesthood. Praise be Jesus Christ.